Blue Jays are in the Bronx, starting a three-game set, the first of two three-game sets with the New York Yankees to close out the season. The second will be at home. Pretty key. So where are the Yankees at? If it's going to be one of the primary opponents for the Toronto Blue Jays who need to win ball games down the stretch, what sort of Yankees team are they going to see? What are you expecting, Ailish?
You know what they're not going to see? Manoah telling Judge to come back past the Audi sign.
Wasn't it Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, Gerrit Cole. Damn it.
Gerrit Cole's getting the last laugh.
Nonetheless. Won't be any of that discourse.
No, there won't be any of that discourse. Although, if you're Gerrit Cole, you might be able to have some fun with it. I don't think Gerrit Cole has fun with anything, though.
He's pretty serious.
We can discuss that more with our next guest, Evan Roberts, co-host of Evan and Tiki on WFAN, Mondays to Fridays, 2 to 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Good morning, Evan. Thanks for jumping on with us.
No problem. When you refer to Gerrit Cole, though, make sure you refer to him as the Cy Young Award winner for 2023, because he has it on lock.
Yeah, he does. And that's what we're kind of bracing for, right? Like, I think it's possible that the Blue Jays see him twice. And if we're, like, going through the schedule to close the season, Yankees-Rays is somewhat daunting, at least on paper. But those Yankee games become a little more tricky if it's Gerrit Cole twice, who I guess has the Cy Young sewed up, but wouldn't like to throw away a start down the stretch, would he?
No. He's never won one, so you know he can taste it. And the Yankees, I give them credit, even though most of us in New York have given up caring because they've been out of it now for a month, they've actually played reasonably well. So they are not exactly the ideal team you want to play when you need wins down the stretch of the year. They've been feisty over the last few weeks.
Yeah, feisty, I think, is the proper word. I mean, we saw a Boston team come through town over the weekend, and it's just like they seem completely unprepared to put up a fight against a team that needs to win games down the stretch. So what is it about this Yankee team that's making them, you know, it's always the Yankees, right? And this is when you look at the lineup this year, at least if you're in Toronto, you're like, well, it doesn't look like the Yankees. But this team is playing reasonably well right now and may have some things to play for down the stretch. So what sort of challenge are the Blue Jays getting with six of the last 12 games remaining on their schedule?
Well, the Yankees starting pitching hasn't been half bad. They've given, you know, Michael King a chance to be in the rotation. He's been decent. Clark Schmidt has pitched a lot better. Carlos Rodon has mostly been bad, but at his last start, he's shown improvement. So the starting pitching has been decent. And offensively, they're giving a lot of their young guys a shot. I think what was so disappointing, Jason Dominguez got called up. He's the Yankees, one of their top prospects. We've heard about him for years because ever since they signed him, as a kid, as like a 17-year-old, all we heard about was the Martian. He's going to be great. He's a switch-hitting Mike Trout. He finally comes up. He gets off to a great start, and then he gets hurt, which I think was a major, major buzzkill for Yankee fans. But even with him not playing, they're giving a lot of their younger guys a shot, and they've been decent. They've been feisty. And obviously, you got to account for Aaron Judge, who – you know, changes games with how good he is offensively.
Yeah, you had a little bit of an injury bug there, which was an exciting storyline to follow and then fell apart a little bit. But when you're looking at, like, how New York got to this point, is the aging roster one of the main storylines that you've been covering about? Was the roster construction right? Did they maybe push some guys a little bit past their limit? And then we'll definitely get into Cashman and Boone. But if you're looking at the players on the field, some subpar seasons from some of the superstars.
Yeah, they couldn't hit. I think, like, to define why the Yankees underachieved this year, they couldn't hit. They couldn't even hit last year. They were carried by Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge had, as we all know, this historical season, and he was able to kind of cover the warts of the rest of the offense. Well, guess what happens this year? Aaron Judge gets hurt, and the Yankees really started to struggle while he was out. But offensively, they have not been the Yankees that we have expected. They haven't been the Yankees in the last few years. So when we try to diagnose what the heck happened with this team, even though they're going to probably finish above 500, which is like automatic for them, it's they didn't score enough runs. And a part of it is what you said. They had an aging offense. Anthony Rizzo had a great April. All of a sudden gets hurt, plays through his probable concussion. He isn't the same guy. And outside of Gleyber Torres, no one had a good year. So they just didn't hit enough, which is obviously not something we're accustomed to with the Yankees.
Yankee apathy seems like a bit of an oxymoron, but you sort of alluded to how some people are tuning out of the season. I guess there's definitely an excuse to, but it just feels strange to even consider that notion. So if we've reached this point and clearly something needs to change, is it going to be a splashy offseason? Like, it may result in a change at management or manager, but there are a couple angels out there who have been, you know, rumored to maybe change teams. Like, do you expect the Yankees to do something something pretty substantial this winter to change the trajectories that are sort of set out right now in the American League East?
Well, the GM is coming back. Brian Cashman is going to be the GM, as much as Yankee fans don't want to get rid of him. Aaron Boone is going to be the manager, as much as Yankee fans want to get rid of him. And I do think, like, they have to make a big move. Like, they have to, because they raise season ticket prices for some of their season ticket holders, which takes a lot of guts when you're coming off a year like this. They're not making the managerial and GM changes that Yankee fans want. So I'm just using logic here. They're going to have to do something big. Now, what is the big? I doubt it's Ohtani, because I don't think they're outbidding everybody, including their crosstown rivals, the Mets. I have a tough time believing Mike Trout's actually available. So is it Yamamoto from Japan, one of the big young starting pitchers? Maybe. Is it, you know, going after like a Matt Chapman? I don't know. But they have to do something, because they cannot sell their fan base on, yeah, we're just going to run it back and we'll be fine. We got a lot of young players. Don't worry. That's a tough sell.
Matt Chapman, eh? Yeah, you're going to get a good look at him over the next 3 days. I mean, you could probably have him. You know, he's a great...
I did that on purpose.
Yeah, he's a good defensive player, but, you know, offensively, you guys say you can't hit.
Had a great April.
He said you can't hit. I don't know if Matt Chapman's your offensive fix, but, you know, he's a good guy. He's well-loved.
Here's the problem. Have you seen the Yankees third base situation? I mean, Josh Donaldson played the position in April. Like, Matt Chapman is a freaking Mike Schmidt compared to what they put out there.
Donaldson already hitting home runs for the Milwaukee Brewers since his I guess he got promoted from the minors in one game. Yes, it's a weird storyline over in New York, but I wonder for you, because New York radio, you guys are one of the best in the world, but you've had the highs and the lows and many, many lows of Yankees, Mets, the Rodgers injury, everything going on in that city. How do you balance that? How do you remain positive? Do you? How does the fan base respond? And I guess it makes for good talk radio every day.
Yeah, positivity doesn't really exist right now. we were positive. Like, think about it. We had a bad baseball season. The Yankees have underachieved. Mets have greatly underachieved. And so we were all looking forward to this football season. The Giants coming off a playoff year. The Jets acquiring Aaron Rodgers with Super Bowl aspirations. And think about how our football season started. On a Sunday night, the Giants lose 40-0 to the Dallas Cowboys, followed by Aaron Rodgers, four plays into his Jet career, tearing his Achilles. So it was quite a turn. And I think, despite the fact the Giants are coming off a win, which was an incredible comeback against Arizona, despite the fact the Jets isn't over necessarily after getting, you know, just blitzkrieged by the Cowboys, it's safe to say our football positivity is not quite as high as, say, it was 9 days ago.
Which of the two football teams do New Yorkers have the most faith in right now? Like, it seems like, you know, the New York Jets are, they've got a Super Bowl skeleton, at least. I mean, I don't know if you can have that without a quarterback, but that's the situation right now. If you plopped an elite-level quarterback on that team, I mean, the sky may be the limit. The Giants, I mean, they're coming off a great season. Of course, Danny Dimes looked like Patrick Mahomes in the second half versus the Cardinals. It is the Cardinals. So, I mean, if you had to, like, hitch your wagon to one with sort of some unknowns here and some possibilities, which one has more potential for you right now?
It's funny. It's a tough question, because talent-wise, I agree with what you said about the Jets. Like, they have everything but the quarterback and really the offensive line. Their offensive line has been iffy. But overall, your point is right. Like, the Jets' defense feel Super Bowl caliber despite what happened against Dallas. But the reason I'd say the Giants is the coach. I trust the coach. Brian Daboll was the coach of the year last year. I give him a lot of credit for what happened in Arizona. They made a lot of half adjustments that work, and they came back. Like, I get Cardinals stink. They're down 28-7. They're down 20-0 at the half. Like, that game in this season felt over. So the only reason I'd lean towards the Giants is because I trust their coaching staff a hell of a lot more than I trust the unproven Ron Saleh. And for now, he's unproven. He hasn't won anything.
Is that what happened in the second half versus the Cardinals? It was Brian Daboll's like, oh, I'm now calling the plays. I'm now, because it looked markedly different, right? And it seems like every time Daboll touches something, it turns to gold. It feels like something changed in the second half, and I saw that maybe Brian Daboll got more involved. Is that in fact what happened?
Hey, we're trying to figure that out. Like, did he take the play calling away from Mike Kafka? Did he just like act as a head coach and say, hey, dude, let's take some shots down the field? But it was completely different. Like, the first play of the second half was a bomb to Jalen Hyatt, and it changed everything. So I think most Giants fans have come to the conclusion. We don't care what happened. All we know is something was really, really different. And if it's the head coach, getting into the ear of the offensive coordinator and saying, hey, dude, we got to do something different. Well, that's called a real head coach. That's what you want a head coach to do. You want him to be involved. So he's going to get credit either way, whether he took the play calling away or not. The Giant offense was completely different. Daniel Jones played the best half of football he's had in his entire career, and it was just such a necessary win. They saved their season with what they did in the second half.
Especially after getting that contract, you gotta prove that it was the right decision, and that'll take a whole season at least, but nonetheless, a good start for it. So if your confidence level isn't with the Jets, I wonder for you if that could change a little bit with a quarterback signing or a quarterback that can add to this team in the next little bit. Do you think that they do that anytime soon? Is there someone that you're circling or someone that the fan base is circling as a adequate replacement or fit to go behind Zach Wilson?
We're screwed. Let's just be honest. I've got my ideas. Sure, you can bring in Nick Foles. He's the best backup you could think of, considering what he's done as a backup. But let's be real. Is Nick Foles really saving the Jets? Is Carson Wentz saving the Jets? You know, we've tried to come up with, well, can they trade for a veteran quarterback? And the two names that logically come to mind are Kirk Cousins and Matthew Stafford. But is that really going to happen? We're just living in a fantasy world. The truth is, Zach Wilson's got to figure it out. The truth is, this defense needs to play at an elite, elite level. The quarterback needs to make very few mistakes. They need to run the football down their opponent's throat. And if they do that, yeah, they can win games. It could even be a playoff team. But the idea that they're going to find, like, this magic quarterback that's not on this roster right now to save them, it's a fantasy.
Okay, is the fantasy also that Aaron Rodgers is eyeing possibly a playoff return? He had this innovative surgery called a speed bridge or something. I don't even know. You know, he's a guy that does his own thing, marches at the beat of his own drum, but really not ruling out that this is even the end of his career, that he could find a way back. That might be a fantasy as well.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think is a bigger fantasy? Aaron Rodgers coming back in the middle of January because of this magical procedure, right? That's fantasy number one.
Yeah.
Or fantasy number two, Zach Wilson helps the Jets even get to continue playing into mid-January. Like, to me, that's the bigger fantasy.
Yeah.
So I have no issue with Aaron Rodgers dreaming big. He should. The guy had a catastrophic injury. His goal should be to come back at Thanksgiving, if that's what he wants to think. Good for him. Doesn't mean I think it's going to happen, but sure, go think that way. But his fantasy of returning in January is not crazier, especially after watching Sunday, of the Jet fantasy of still playing come mid-January.
Was the idea always half-baked with Aaron Rodgers? Like, what was the feeling pre-injury?
Loved it. I mean, they went for it. Because like you said earlier, they had the skeleton of a Super Bowl roster, so you get a real quarterback. And of all the veteran quarterbacks that were out there, like, Derek Carr would have been nice. I wouldn't have cried about signing Derek Carr, but Aaron Rodgers was clearly, in my mind, the best available guy because of the return you could get on him. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback, despite his age. And sure, there are concerns with it, but I thought the reward was so much higher. The mistake they made, and I said this at the time, was I thought they needed a real backup. Like, I thought they were done with Zach Wilson. I was done with Zach Wilson. So if they had brought in somebody else, whether it was Baker Mayfield, let's say, I would have felt a little bit better after this injury, saying, all right, Baker, go figure it out now for the next 16 weeks. Now, I understand. I don't know if Baker would have signed because he has more of an opportunity to play, clearly, in Tampa Bay. But I know that myself and a lot of Jet fans love the Rodgers signing, but we were also ready to move on from Zach and wanted to bring in, like, a real backup, not him.
Oh, we're chatting with Evan Roberts, co-host of Evan and Tiki on WFAN. So you know the baseball season's over, pretty much. Tune your chance to attention to football, excuse me. And week one, at least, does not go very well. Did that have you looking ahead to the next season? I mean, RJ Barrett had
RJ.
A wonderful, wonderful summer with us, and maybe I'm a little worried to bring it up because his influence at FIBA may be a little bit stronger than the NBA influence. But what are the prospects for the Knicks this year, and what's the feeling? You know, we're still a month and change away, but what is the feeling with the Knicks for this upcoming year?
I think everybody's excited because they went further than anyone could have thought last year. But I think those expectations, it's weird, are we should be good, we should be fun, we'd love to get back to where we were, but I think Knicks fans already have the wandering eye. They're looking at, ooh, Giannis doesn't seem happy. Oh, Joel Embiid doesn't seem happy, because I think realistically, as great as Jalen Brunson was last year, as well as RJ played in the postseason, which I think was encouraging with how he played in some of his postseason games, so than FIBA, because I just don't think a lot of New Yorkers are paying attention to it. I think that the eye is on, hey, to get to the next level, we need that superstar. And so I know that when Giannis made those comments a week ago, where he basically said, hey, if I've got a better chance to win somewhere else, I'm gone, I think that lit up the eyes of the Knicks fan. But overall, there's excitement for this season, but I think they know deep down they're just a player away from a championship caliber roster.
Trust me, that lit up the eyes of Raptors fans too with Giannis, because there's the Greek community, and every time he comes up here, it feels like a sales pitch. Everybody comes out, oh, Giannis, we love you. So yeah. If he does end up moving out of one organization to another, I think there'll be a lot of happy people to throw their name in the hat. Do Knicks fans still bing bong? Is that gonna die out? Is it just part of the franchise moving forward?
Oh, I hope it does. I mean, the bing bong thing was so stupid. You know, years ago, they had a thing called Knicks tape. Like, every time they won a game, it was Knicks tape, Knicks tape. And eventually it died out. I think the bing bong has died out. The problem is, what we have to worry about is, well, what's next? Mm. If Knicks tape is gone, a bing bong is gone, what's the next thing we're going to have to get ready for?
Well, there will always be something. You definitely got to cling always on to something, get the squad going. Evan, appreciate you jumping on this morning and running the gauntlet of all the New York storylines. Enjoy this Yankees-Blue Jays series. Hopefully one team prevails, and that's ours.
Best of luck. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Evan Roberts, co-host of Evan and Tiki on WFAN, Monday to Friday from 2 to 6:30 p.m. Eastern. I don't know if hosting the radio show in New York City or New York in general would be, I think maybe you just laugh at the misfortunes that your couple teams have had. You know, Mets and Yankees was a brutal, 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 brutal season.
Yeah.
And then you get all this hope for a football year and it's okay, like, we got something that's going to bring this state together. And it could not have started worse, as he mentioned.
I think
week one was awful.
The calendar year 2023 for Toronto Sports Radio, like, I don't think it's been, like, overly disastrous. I mean, the Leafs did get the series victory, but there's been some negativity. I mean, this Blue Jays season has been frustrating. Mm-hmm. Frustrating end, and a devastating end, really, in the second round of the Maple Leafs season. The Raptors were kind of a joke by the end of the year,
yeah,
losing their coach. Like, a lot of stuff happened there. But it feels like it would be that year, this Toronto sports season 2023, times two, times three, just by sheer volume alone, but also the devastation. I mean, the disappointment is pretty big. And there's so many teams that are falling into the same trap, it seems like, with in New York. Even the Rangers, pretty disappointing, right? Like, we didn't get to the Rangers with him, but there were a lot of expectations and they kind of fell short. And they were probably one of the more successful teams in New York. So it's just weird. I mentioned, like, the Yankee. He said that, yeah, people are tuning out the Yankees. It just doesn't feel like that should ever happen. And maybe it does, and I'm not giving enough credit to Yankees fans and how much is going on there that, yeah, why would they settle for something that's inferior? But it just doesn't feel right with the Yankees. It didn't feel right when you looked at the lineup. Didn't feel right at any point this season. Like, they're supposed to be big, bad, intimidating, scary. And if you look at them and the way the season has played out, they're not. And maybe that's famous last words with what we might see here over the last six games that they play the Blue Jays. But it just has never felt Yankee-like. And that must be a weird thing to grapple with if you're doing sports radio in that market.
You know what? Something that has been quiet this offseason is Patrick Kane. He's a free agent. And he was a Ranger for them. Remember that little Showtime to Broadway?
Yeah, underwent some surgery.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what's going to. I said, I'm going to pick him up cheap. Like, can you get him cheap?
I think it would.
It's Patrick Kane.
I think it would make more sense. He probably is, like, already has it shelved somewhere. Mm. But you can kind of manipulate the cap a little bit more. Maybe you can get a little bit more money. Maybe it's prorated. Like, if you do wait, maybe there's a reason why it'll work out in your favor. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up, though. I mean, Buffalo, if it's Buffalo, they probably can't wait. I don't know. Maybe he goes back to New York, but that didn't really work.
He's turning 35 next season, but
Chicago's not going to take him back because they want to turn the page.
Yeah, no, they definitely can't. They can't come back to him. I think it was hip resurfacing surgery. Oof. And I mean, he said this postseason, he feels he wants to keep playing. His passion's still there. He feels like he's still got something to give.
Still a young enough guy.
Yeah, that's good. 35, still young enough. Love that.
We hope.
We hope. Okay, let's, speaking of Bing Bong. Oh, no, that was the A-list. We don't have that in this, but we did play it earlier. I was sad that he...
Instead of Bing Bong, how about we fire the cannons?
Okay.
Something to chew on. It's brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, okay, there you go. I know this story has...
We didn't get your take, so this is perfect.
Well, I thought we could chew on it. 24 hours after Mike Babcock, less than 24 hours, tendered his resignation. I'm going to sneeze, so just a second.
Tendered his resignation because, you know, there's been some reporting, but clearly Mike Babcock did something that was a little bit beyond the pale. Apparently had outside of a facility a player's phone for several minutes is the reporting right now. So I guess that's kind of the smoking gun. But either way, he does something that may not be like the most fireable offense in the world. But when you're Babcock with the history and the reporting and the story and everything that went on with it, he... came into an agreement with the Columbus Blue Jackets to move on and not be the coach.
So yesterday, the Columbus Blue Jackets held a bit of a press conference. And John Davidson, who is the president of hockey operations, said the following. We went through a process earlier this summer prior to hiring Mike Babcock as our head coach, but we got it wrong and that's on us. That's a pretty fair statement. I can promise you we will learn from this moving forward. I also understand the criticism that we are getting. It is deserved, but all we can do is learn from it and do everything we can to help our coaches and players get ready for the season. And Jarmo Kekalainen as well spoke and said the same kind of thing. Like, you know, it's obviously fair to question our due diligence, but I can assure you we did it thoroughly. At the end of the day, I believe that Mike Babcock deserved another opportunity to coach. Obviously, that was a mistake, and that responsibility is mine. Well, I do think they get a little bit of credit for owning it, but, I mean, it really should fall fully and squarely on them, and I wonder why they are still going to move forward with this. They said they don't want to have any more distractions as the team starts training camp tomorrow. We don't want to make any more moves. Let's just move forward, but unscathed a little bit.
Yeah, there are reasons people are reluctant to give second chances because sometimes someone says they changed, that there's been some reform, that they're a different person. They're really not. And maybe they did their due diligence. Maybe they talked to loads of people. Maybe all those people had positive experiences, though, with Mike Babcock. We know the people that have negative experiences with Mike Babcock tend to fall into two patterns. They're like Jason Spezza's, where it's like, hey, can I take advantage of this veteran? Because I don't really like him and I don't want him to play for us. Mm. Or do I try to earn some power over a young player like Mitch Marner, if we're just doing the Leaf thing. So it's young and old, it seems. It's not, you know, fellow coaches who seem to have great things to say or elite-level players who would be treated well by Mike Babcock, right? So it's depending on who you ask. And I guess if there's a failure on the Blue Jackets from the due diligence standpoint is maybe they only asked people that had no reason to think Mike Babcock was going to do anything but coach a hockey team effectively. I guess it's a learning point for everyone. And I'm a second chance guy. I want people to have second chances, but this is another reason why we're going to probably see fewer. Hockey is a second chance, so maybe there needs to be fewer second chances in hockey. But at least in terms of this story, it's a reminder that due diligence is like actually due diligence. Like doing due diligence on due diligence is probably an important thing because not everyone has the same experience with everyone with the same person, and that's clear with Mike Babcock.
I'll say credit. I don't know if you already discussed this yesterday, but for Marty Walsh, new regime comes in as the NHLPA executive director this summer. A little bit of a different background. He was like mayor of Boston. He's got a political background. But to really dive into something that I guess some people also just, it's just it's a podcast, it's spit and chiclets, whatever. To really dig into something and to find obviously enough substantial evidence that this guy had crossed the line in one of your, I guess, your first things that you do in this role, I think the players probably respect him a lot more and they probably feel like they're on the right foot moving forward with him as their representative because it could have been easy to brush this one under the rug and say, well, you know, like whatever. It's just, we talked to two people.
Yeah, I clearly don't know this is fact, but I would surmise that this does not happen in a Donald Fehr-led organization.
That's fair to say.
It just feels like Donald Fehr was surface level. He was due diligence on the part of Mike Babcock, where it's just like, oh, we asked a couple people and Boone Jenner said it was okay, so it's okay. But Marty Walsh went the extra mile and maybe it was punishment doesn't fit the crime, but when you're Babcock, you had to be perfect, as our Elliot Friedman wrote last week. Yeah. And he wasn't perfect. If you had someone's cell phone away from them scrolling through it, that's a clear violation of privacy. And when Babcock got to the point where he had so many indiscretions already, it's slam dunk. He can't coach in this league anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. If that's even just like one incident that happened with someone, and that's what we're hearing, and there might be more, and we never might know about it, whatever. But it's tough because he's a guy with a pretty prestigious background. And I wonder how that follows him around. Like when there's reunions of Stanley Cup champs, when there's reunions of Olympics, and there's times where he'll be honored. Like, I wonder how this moves forward for Mike Babcock.
Here's something to chew on. He'll move forward with money because there was no termination with cause.
Yeah, so do we know about the financial situation?
We don't know for sure, but I think
I think it's because he resigned.
I would
it's different
guess,
than termination.
Yeah, I would guess he's going to make the money to go away quietly because Babcock would be kicking and screaming otherwise, right? So he earned 3.5 seasons of standard level, like highest paid coach type stuff with the Maple Leafs,
yeah,
right?
History
three and a half years of that. So we're talking about bagging another what or in the area of $20-25 million. He's going to add he's going to go 5.5 years. He may never coach again, but 5.5 years of not coaching, but getting paid like a high level coach and earning what upwards of $35 million to do that, to just not coach, just hang out the cabin with his family. And that's why it's not that bad for him, because he made a ridiculous amount of money on the back of so much success before, but it's unbelievable that he's going to continue to make loads of cash despite the reputation and all that everyone's said about him over the last couple of years.
And you know, a bunch of coaches, when they transition out of hockey, like they get analyst jobs, they get panel jobs. That ain't happening. Like he's done,
but he's going to be
rich.
Okay.
So I think he's going to be fine. Maybe he'll coach University of Saskatchewan again. That was so weird.
I think he's got to stay.
Did we hear anything about like that time?
He might have
to
stay away from kids.
I think he should just stop coaching.
Who don't have the ability to say no if he asks for his cell phone.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's the end of that story. I feel bad for the Blue Jackets that are entering training camp with all of this, but they kind of shut it up now. I'm sure the kids will get asked about it. They move forward, and they don't have the biggest exciting season ahead other than Fantilli, right? Like, they got some young talent. It'll be exciting to follow them, but this is a bit of a black eye to start your season. So we'll see how it goes with Columbus. Okay, let's take a break. Andy Petrillo, host of CBC Sports and Once Soccer, who helped host Monday's broadcast of the inaugural PWHL draft yesterday, will join us after the break to go through what it was like being a part of history, the buzz, Billie Jean King, some of the surprises in the draft, and overall this monumental day in women's hockey history. Then we'll be joined by David Alter at 8 o'clock and Donovan Bennett at 8:30. All of that to come on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 15 rounds of a inaugural PWHL draft yesterday, and I did not hear my name called. Strange. I thought Jerry D got up on stage, you know, famous comedian. I thought, here's his joke.
You were waiting on that.
Send from nowhere.
Are you and Jerry tight like that, where you might make that joke?
That would have been good, though. There was a lot of jokes up on stage. It was a really great day. It was a lot of fun people announcing picks, and it was just overall great.
Because I know you're joking about yourself, but that unknown athlete?
Mm-hmm. No, never heard. Didn't get an update from her.
Nothing happened there?
Just
not drafted?
Definitely not drafted.
Wow.
Quietly into the abyss. Someone that we saw and thought did an incredible job yesterday was Andy Petrillo, host of CBC Sports and One Soccer, and was the host of Monday's inaugural PWHL draft. Andy, you were a part of history yesterday. How was the vibe, the energy, and the opportunity to be, you know, alongside some of the greatest hockey players of all time?
Well, as you're probably going to hear in my voice, I'm still sitting in bed because I was buzzing all day that it was actually really difficult to fall asleep. It was an incredible day. It was, you know, a ton of energy. And as you probably saw as well, a little bit, we just showed it off the top. The players, when they entered the broadcast center, it was the periwinkle carpet. So there were a ton of fans just on either side, a lot of young hockey players who were so excited when the players walked in and their names were announced. They were just freaking out and screaming. So, I mean, it was just great energy. It really felt like a proper event, like what you would see at an NHL when players walk down that red carpet, when players have sponsors there taking photos, when fans are there asking for photos and autographs. That is exactly what was happening yesterday. So right from start to finish, it was a great energy.
Well, we appreciate you getting up and grinding with us after a long day and an awesome day. So I think, I mean, for me as a player, I knew what yesterday was going to mean for the league. I knew what the players had put in behind the scenes. And I know you've covered sport for a very long time. But did you, when you got there yesterday, did you realize kind of the magnitude of what was about to happen, the inaugural PWHL draft, something that people have been fighting for forever, to be happening and to be living it live? And then kind of like that reset at the end, like that just happened, that this is something that we'll look back on for hopefully decades to come as the start of something special.
It hit me when I started to do the interviews. I always go into just autopilot when I'm getting ready to do a show. I knew it was special, but you have to prepare and, you know, you want to give everyone their due and do it justice. And then, you know, I sat and spoke to Cheryl Pounder before she went on air and she was getting teary-eyed. Then Billie Jean King joined me and I could tell she was just speechless, looking around saying, I can't believe what we've been visualizing for 5 years has come to fruition. And then we saw Kendall Coyne Schofield, who got choked up. She was, you know, as you heard from probably Billie Jean in that interview, she was the one who made the original phone call to Billie Jean to get her involved and to help make this happen and ask for her advice on what they needed to do. So she was a huge part. And then, you know, she had a baby this past summer and then legitimately thought she wasn't going to be signed or wasn't going to be drafted because maybe people wouldn't think she'd be in shape in time. And, you know, everything she worked hard for, maybe it wouldn't happen. We all know she got signed and that wasn't going to be the case. But you just saw how, you know, much it meant to her. Then Alina Mueller gets drafted and starts crying during her interview. And that's when it really just like everything was kind of happening. I was like, whoa, okay, like this is very emotional. And I can't even begin to imagine all the hard work behind the scenes and what that meant for it to come together. Because if there's one thing Billie Jean King pointed out, and we would know this as well just by covering any kind of labor dispute or contract dispute or anything that has to do with people sticking together and fighting for what they believe in. It's not hard because, it's not easy. It's hard because people will break from rank. People get scared. People get nervous. And what Billie Jean said is why this worked was because the best hockey players in the world stuck together for 5 years. That is not easy. She's like, nobody broke rank. And when you can stick together, then you give those investors that belief that you're serious as well and that you're actually committed and ready to do this. So, you know, that's what I mean as well about the emotions behind it and also the camaraderie. Like these women, they did what it took to make that day happen. So, yeah, after interviewing them and looking in their eyes and seeing it, like it was really special. It hit me at some point. But, you know, you got to stay in autopilot, right, so you can still do the show.
The Billie Jean King factor, Andy, like why is that such a powerful force for this league, having her involved and having her being so enthusiastic with her involvement?
Well, when you think of Billie Jean King, what do you think of? Like, you think of an advocate. You think of a fighter. You think of someone who doesn't back down. So that alone is what you want representing your league. Yes, she's an investor. And she said it too. I mean, she's also just, you know, she cuts through all the crap. I got to be honest with you guys. Like, even before going to air, I had a chance to, you know, just talk with her a little bit. And she's like, listen, in order for anything to work, you need money, stop with all this. You just need money. And she's like, you know, so for the Mark Walter group to get involved, and Mark and his wife, Kimbra, you know, I mean, these are people who are worth billions of dollars. So for them to get involved, and then Billie Jean King knowing that, I mean, anyone, any league, this is not just a women's league, this is a men's league, because I'm also covering the Canadian Premier League, mm-hmm. the only men's domestic, you know, soccer league in this country right now. And I can tell you, when you start a sports league, you lose money. That is just what happens in any sports league. In fact, there are probably business entrepreneurs listening right now saying, honey, it's not just in sports. Like, when you first get going, you always lose money. So you need people who are willing to invest that, knowing that they're not going to see it again for another, you know, 5 to 10 years later. So, you know, it's huge from a financial point of view, but also just what she represents, what she means. that's definitely a reputation you want attached to your league.
Yeah, led by Billie Jean King feels like the biggest storyline into like who's behind the scenes. But Stan Kasten and Mark Walter, as you mentioned, that ownership group, who have a lot of history of making good things happen, from building leagues to owning teams to being CEOs of franchises, having that legitimacy and like the business background. I know it was very instrumental with the CBA that the players worked hand in hand with, but just having like that level of expertise in your corner. I know you got a chance to chat with some of them as well. What does that bring to the way that the league is formed, and also the idea that this is a buy-in for many, many years? They're not just taking a swing and saying, we'll give you a year or two and see how it goes. They want to see this thing come to the highest level that it should.
It's invaluable, because you mentioned it, between all three of them, they have their fingers in MLB, NBA, WNBA, the NWSL, and now here they are in hockey. So they know what it takes to just run sports. They know the sports world. And it's not just about putting a team on the field, on the court, on the pitch. It's also about the stuff that goes on everywhere else, the marketing of it, the television or broadcast and radio and, you know, these days streaming, all those types of deals. They know everything that goes into it as well. They understand the relationships with sponsors. And they also, just to your point, like, they know the dollars and cents, so they can look at a year. And these are things that, you know, I'm even becoming privy to as well, as I cover the startup league, but as I continue to have conversations with Diana Matheson, who is heads up Project 8, as we know, trying to bring a women's domestic soccer league to Canada. It's like all of a sudden you go, okay, what does it cost to fly a team? What does it cost to feed a team? Oh, then there's per diem. Okay, now there's hotels. Oh, there's equipment. Okay, who's paying for that water bottle? Like, it's all this kind of stuff that you don't even realize, like right down to, if you're going to wipe your face with a towel, that's probably a sponsored towel. And now even as a viewer, when you're, you know, when you realize all the things that go into sports and all the different avenues as well to make what Billie Jean King said is important, money, watch sports now, everything is sponsored. Like, I remember hearing a story one time about a sponsor had switched over in Major League Soccer, and the towels were now different, and then, you know, the goalie went to his net, went to go wipe his face before getting ready for the second half to begin, and, like, the trainer had to sprint across the field because the goalkeeper still had the wrong, like, he had the old towel, and you can get fined by the league. And so there's all things like this about respecting the sponsors and making sure all that kind of stuff can happen. So, you know, when you have these types of people who have been doing this for years, there is definitely a sense of security. You know, there's a sense of confidence. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I loved what Stan Kasten said, because they also know it, right? Like, he was asked this one question about, all right, you guys have built it. Now is it up to the fans to show up and support? And he went, no. He's like, you never put that burden on the fans. He goes, it's always on us to give them an entertaining product. Make the fans want to show up. He goes, don't point fingers and tell them they have to. He goes, it's still on us to create an entertaining product. So they know this. They know that this is, you know, not even just the first step. It's the first half step. The draft is just the first half step. There's still so much work to be done, and they know it. And I think that that should give the fans, that should give, you know, the players a ton of confidence.
Yeah, I remember Billie Jean King in her inaugural pick, she spoke for a little bit and she said, like, we want to earn your support. We want to earn your fan base. And I think that's a really apt way to put it, is that it's not just now, it's here, come watch it. It's like, we want to show you that this league is for real. I think sponsorship is so important. I mean, Canadian Tire yesterday being the presenting sponsor, obviously they have bought in, and that you saw a lot of other ones. And I think just more to come when you look at the way that yesterday went. So in terms of the actual draft, 15 rounds in the snake format. It was awesome to watch, because the GM tables were buzzing. They had their earpieces in. It was so legit. And not that I didn't think it was going to be, but I thought maybe they just had their list of picks and they wanted it, but seemed like real negotiation. There were stats people. There's people like that had done so many types of video coordinating and video research on these players. It was so legitimate. I wonder, for you covering it and having the picks come in and responding on the spot, and, you know, some people falling, some people rising, like, how exciting the actual draft was itself. Seeing the people get up on stage, get a photo, see their families, their teammates, their agents, just the entire energy of what we got to witness yesterday.
Oh, well, first of all, I can tell you, drafts are hard as a broadcaster. I mean, oh my goodness. I don't know if you saw my notes by the end.
Yeah, all
nice
over the pile.
Place. It was a disaster. It was like a bomb went off at my side of the desk. Everyone else was all neat. I'm like, oh, Lord.
It was crazy. But I have to give a shout out to everyone who worked behind the scenes. If you just allow me a moment to say, like, mm-hmm. you know, CBC Sports, they work so closely with the league. And you're right. Like, let's just be honest. We didn't know what we were going to expect. Was this going to somewhat look like the drafts of other leagues that we've seen? Was it going to look like an NHL draft? We don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't know. Was it just going to be really kind of awkward of someone getting up there and saying, like, we just didn't know what to expect, plain and simple. And in fact, a lot of people from the league went, we didn't know what to expect. But also working with the people behind the scenes, you know, the space that we had at the Barbara Frum atrium, like, CBC did it right. And I have to say, there were some league officials who walked in, like, even Stan Kasten at one point walked in and went, whoa, like, I didn't expect this kind of setup. And he was, you know, so appreciative. And I mean, we worked hard. We had a rehearsal the day before, because again, we wanted to do it justice, and it's all about that timing and all about knowing when the pick's going to come in and how you're going to get the information on that player and when you're going to start talking and when you're going to throw back. And, you know, I commend also the league for just trusting us. Like we said, we're going to cue you. We're going to tell you when to get up. We're going to tell you when to talk. Like, we need to make this work. And they were so wonderful. It was just, you know, choreographed and coordinated so well, because that's what we wanted to do, was give it that professional feel, give it what it deserves. Because if there's something, you know, Haley Salavian said it off the top of the show, where she flat out said, I just want to talk hockey when it comes to the women's game. She's like, I understand all the grief that's been happening the last few years, and we've been covering it. She goes, but let's talk about who's better on the power play. Let's talk about who's the number one goalie. So we wanted to really, truly give it that professional flair. And I feel we did. And you know what? These are incredible. You know, the GMs themselves, the coaches, you know, these are people who are exceptional players in their day, are also just exceptional coaching and managing. And Corey Chevry, as we know, becoming the first woman as well to be part of, you know, the Canadian men's under 18. So for the first time ever, you know, Hockey Canada having a woman part of the men's coaching staff. Like, these are people who are just trailblazers in their own way. And we wanted to give them that respect. And I'm really happy, like, for you to say that. Like, I'm grateful that it came across that way too.
So what was the story of the draft for you, Andy, when looking at the teams, looking how everything went down? I mean, there was a run on the defense position for sure. Mm. Jocelyn Larocque going second was a little bit surprising. Taylor Heisey, we knew, was going number one, but, you know, that might be considered the best pick of the draft, given that it was the top pick of the draft and a slam dunk pick at that. Did anything sort of stick out as, you know, an important theme when looking at how this all went down for the first time ever?
You know, there's so many things, as you mentioned, and I can, you know, probably take up another hour of your time. But if there's one thing I want to highlight, so as much as the majority of the players drafted were Canadian and American, like, at least in those first four rounds, you know, that we covered, the European players that were drafted, so Alina Mueller going third overall from Switzerland, Olympic, you know, bronze medalist, Dominika Leskova going from the Czech Republic, and Chloe Aurore going from France. Like, I think it's worth noting that, you know, there are some European players as well who were kind of hesitant. Like, they still don't know, you know, what this is going to be. There's still maybe a lack of an understanding as well of what is this going to be. A lot of them, you know, did sign in the PHF and maybe still kind of feel like, you know, is this real or what just happened, or feel a little slighted. You know, we know that there is a league in Sweden, but obviously the PWHL wants to be the NHL of the world and get the best players there. But I think it's worth noting the European players who went, because I think it opens the door. I think it sends a message. And, you know, I wonder if that'll just, you know, we'll see more of an influx of European players. Those who didn't get drafted yesterday, by the way, immediately become free agents. So will we see more European players at training camp, which begins in November? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that to me is when you start to truly become the global league you want to become. Yes, we know a lot of fantastic players come out of Canada and the United States, you know, but, you know, what also makes a league, you know, global? Well, it's global athletes. So when I saw the European players go, I went, okay, you know, is Leskova going to be that beacon now for other Czech Republic players? You know, when Mueller goes third overall, she's going to have some bragging rights too, because her brother Mirko went in the first draft, or the first round, I should say, the NHL draft. It's like, that's a lot of talent in that family. It's like, is she going to send a message? to players in Switzerland. You know, and then the same thing with Aurore, who, you know, played for the French national team at just the age of 14. Now she's 24. So she's been a massive representative of that national team. She's helped it grow. So you know that they're going to be looking at her going, oh, okay, she's in North America now? Oh, okay. So that, to me, I think is what stands out a little bit, is just, will we see that influx of European players, and those three in particular kind of being that beacon of light for players in their countries?
Yeah, I got the stats up here. Of course, North America leading the way, 85% of the selections, but Europe with 14%, 14.5% is pretty outstanding. Czechia with 5, Finland 2, Sweden 2, and then, as you mentioned, Switzerland, France, Austria, and Germany. I think if you're a hockey fan, sometimes we do get maybe complacent that it's Canada, U.S., but it shows like the global game is probably in a really good state and only getting better. Okay, Andy, I got to ask you before we let you go, are you a Team Toronto fan now? Are you gonna let this play out? I mean, you know, you're here in the city and Toronto look pretty good, some big names, but are you, you know, you leaning one way? Is there a jersey you're gonna end up getting all 6?
Oh geez. You know, I mean, I'm patriotic to my city. Mm-hmm. So I flat out admit that whatever team is in the city is the team I cheer for. I have a commitment to that team, and I've never been shy to say it. But I'm also somebody who latches on to a player, and then I'll cheer that player on. So I can't wait till they start, because which player am I suddenly going to fall in love with and I'm going to want to buy their jersey? Mm. Like, who's going to be exceptional? Who's going to catch my eye? And it's not necessarily a goal scorer. I typically like the gritty ones. So is it somebody who just like ends up blocking a lot of shots, or, you know, some big hits or whatever? So we'll see. Or we all know, I mean, again, self-proclaimed goalie hugger. Mm. Somebody goes and makes some incredible saves. Maybe it's a goalie I latch on to. So I will always support my team, my local team, my city team. But then I usually find a player who I'm a big fan of. And maybe it'll be on Toronto as well. I don't know. But we'll let it play out and then we'll see.
We'll have to see in January when the puck drops which jersey you're wearing on your Instagram or your Twitter, because I'm still shopping around too. I got friends on all the teams.
Hey,
I'm still
shopping. Montreal fan.
Okay, well, I'm working on it. I don't know.
You're dancing around it, but you just don't.
You
just
can't say
we
that.
We can be rivals, Andy. It's okay.
Oh, that's dangerous waters. In the world of hockey, you want to be in Toronto.
I'm going full heel.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, we really appreciate you jumping on this morning after a long day. Congrats again on being a part of something so special, and we look forward to following it along throughout the inaugural season.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Andy. That's Andy Petrillo, host of CBC Sports and One Soccer, and of course was on the inaugural broadcast of the PWHL draft yesterday. Now, we don't have names. We don't have arenas. Mm. We don't have logos. But some sleuthing yesterday was that every time there was a draft graphic posted, so Team Toronto selects whomever, it was color-coded specifically for each team. So if you do the, you know, FBI analysis that I've been doing, it looks like the following. Minnesota's draft graphics had a dark blue and a slate blue, like a little bit of a gray blue and a dark blue. Those are the two colors they used, okay?
Okay.
Toronto, blue, like real
Leafs blue.
Toronto Furies, the old CWHL team, they were using that color.
Okay. Boston, important color in this
city.
Yeah,
and I think it makes sense. Boston was using green.
That doesn't make any sense. Does it?
What are they, Celtics over there? But maybe they just want to steer clear.
I forgot about the Celtics, but it just doesn't feel like a hockey team in Boston should be green.
Green. New York had more of a teal, like a two shades of teal.
Okay.
I like that color. It looked good. And that's a previously used color. Ottawa was red.
Oh, not Montreal?
And Montreal was more maroon.
Mm.
So those were the colors. When you look at the draft graphics, this is not law-abiding, but I'm trying to do some analysis because I'm eager to get some color schemes.
The closest we can get to some sort of identification mm-hmm. for these teams and where these players or who these players are going to represent.
It's just very interesting. I think, and there was some purple being used and some teams, but also purple was the color of the PWHL yesterday. Like, they were doing that for the purple carpet. They've used purple in their graphics. Purple's a very popular color. Maybe that's their team logo or their
league
their
logo.
League color.
Wait, did the league have a logo?
Not
finalized?
No, it's just kind of like the letters PWHL. Okay. But they've been using purples and blues.
I mean, they could have had that done.
Yeah.
If we're quibbling.
I think we're quibbling today.
They could have had a league logo.
I think it's probably fair to have a league logo. But green for Boston, very interesting.
Why does that stand out to you?
I don't know, because I just don't picture Boston being green.
Okay.
Anyway, but I'm liking the color options. I'm liking the blue in Toronto, which makes sense. We do wonder if they'll keep any of the names or like a testament to former names in different leagues.
Would you...
just I kind of want to start fresh.
I think a fresh start is the appropriate way to do it,
but...
We'll see.
We'll see.
It's tough to come up with new names.
Yeah, especially with all the eyes. Like, if they don't like it, it's like, they've ruined my team already.
Yeah.
And we don't need any lady Rangers or lady
Not a fan of the Buttes.
No, none of that. Okay, let's take a break. David Alter, after the break, Maple Leafs reporter at Sports Illustrated and the Hockey News. Tomorrow kicks off festivities, media day for the Maple Leafs, and then official training camp practice scheduled for Thursday morning. The Leafs had a charity golf tournament yesterday. Some good social media clips from the guys. They're TikTok stars all of a sudden. Maybe loosen up the reins of no social media fun. It looked like maybe a different Leafs team out there on the links. Let's talk to David Alter after the break on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.